Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. It's a splendid evening here, Thursday night, probably stretch into early Friday morning when I get through with this podcast, just outside Atlanta, Georgia. And the RSP post-draft is complete, and it is available for download. You can get it at mattwaldman.com. You can download it there. And remember, when you get the RSP, you get the post-draft, the pre-draft, and you get put on the newsletter all for one price. It is an excellent, excellent deal. Trust me when I tell you that my readers tend to tell me in probably every 10 to 15 emails, you should be charging more. I would give you more money. I aim to basically give you something that you feel like you're getting a lot for what you pay for. And you do. I re-rank 300 players in the post-draft guide from 2017 to 2019. So those three draft classes are re-ranked for you. I give you a cheat sheet, and I'm going to talk about that cheat sheet in a minute. You get good fit, bad fit. You get depth chart analysis that includes commentary about the player's fit within that new team, what the depth chart looks like, what the contract situation is in terms of 1 year left or 2 years left for some of these players who are competing with that rookie, as well as my outlook on that depth chart in terms of what I think about some of those players, as well as projections of what I think short-term, long-term, and maybe what their ceiling is for over 150, 160, maybe close to actually 200 players. I didn't really even remember the count of what I did. I believe I did close to 200 players, if not a little over that, for that depth chart look. And then there's, of course, the newsletter that comes out monthly, June through December, which I look at those players, the rookies from 2019. I look at, give you some previews to 2020 content that will be coming out that I'm researching. I even re-rank the players another two times during the year, in August after training camp and in December after we've seen a good bit of them during the season. So this is what you get in addition to that pre-draft, which I think is really the goods. The pre-draft is the goods. The post-draft fantasy players like, in terms of the immediacy to have a plan. And the reason they really like it is because of the cheat sheet. The cheat sheet that I provide covers over 160 players, way more than you're going to need. It's tiered, so you get five tiers worth of players. It's ordered across all positions, but it's also separated by positions. This is all visually done, separated by positions. It shows you my ranking of the player post-draft, but it also gives you a value, and that value is what I call the sweet spot. That sweet spot is a calculation of my post-draft ranking versus the ADP, the average draft position, of 15 drafts that I monitor during the week after the NFL draft. And I calculate the difference. And when there's a notable difference, I calculate that to show you approximately how long you can wait to let that player fall if I have him underrated, say like Hakeem Butler, who I have second overall on my board in terms of where I rank his ability long term. But maybe you can get him about 16 picks later, roughly around that range, give or take five picks. So say about 11 to 16 picks later, you can get him. And I show you that so that with every player, you can see, do I think you can wait a little longer to get them? Do I think you're going to have to move up a little bit higher to get them based on the demand? And maybe that's something that you may not want to do if you follow my value of that player. I show you that type of thing. So it's all visually on one sheet, very easy to understand, good notations with it. People love it. So you can get that. And I would definitely recommend you do so, mattwaldman.com. You order that. You're going to order, and as you order, you get a login. You create a login and a password. You go back into the site after you use PayPal. You log in, put in your password. It takes you to a page, gives you a link to download it in PDF form. Everything's bookmarked for you. So, again, highly recommend doing that. Best bang for your buck you're going to get. I promise you that when it comes to these skill players and how they're evaluated. So let's talk about some of these players. Man, did we have a draft this year that was intriguing you know, because on the one hand, some of these receivers fell further than a lot of people were comfortable with. You know, it wasn't an especially strong running back class compared to previous years, but there were some interesting and good fits with these players. The tight end class is strong, and there were some really nice fits there. And then there's a lot of players who I think could have value as undrafted free agents. Now, we'll see how it pans out, because usually it doesn't pan out all that well. But it's fun to explore the talents who are, you know, who weren't drafted, who had draftable skills, and to see, you know, whether or not they have a situation that may be worth monitoring them. And I think it's always worth monitoring undrafted free agents. So we're going to talk about a number of players where I liked their landing spot. And I'm going to include players that I asked folks on Twitter probably about 20, 30 minutes ago if they would just tell me who they wanted me to talk about. And so I just was on with Sigmund Bloom on the Audible, and we talked about some players. But I'm going to go in a little bit more depth with some of the guys that we did talk about in addition to guys that we didn't. Let's start with Will Greer, okay? He was my number one quarterback in this class pre-draft, slightly edging out Kyler Murray. Well, guess what? Found out that the Carolina Panthers had a similar grade for Will Greer in terms of slightly edging out Kyler Murray. Why is that? I can't answer for the Panthers, but I can speculate. And part of what I would speculate is that Greer, they really value Greer's ability as an anticipatory passer. What I mean by that is that he doesn't wait for the route to break open to begin his throw. He throws the ball when he recognizes where the defensive back's position is relative to the receiver's position in the route before the break, and he lets that ball go, knowing where that receiver is going to break, and the ball arrives to the receiver in stride into the open space where you might not have seen it if you were just waiting for the receiver to come wide open. Now, Cam Newton shows some anticipation in his game, but because he's a big, strong guy who can run and buy time, he often leans on that to the point where he can be a see-it, throw-it quarterback. Matthew Stafford's a good example of a passer who often is a see-it, throw-it quarterback, someone who basically can the advantage of that is that you can buy time, shake defenders who are pressuring the pocket, and then you can deliver the ball to a receiver who's breaking open and continuing to run to an open area or turn around and stop and create openings through some improvisation. So that's a valuable trait to have. It's a valuable skill that you'd like all quarterbacks to have. Cam Newton, with his mobility and strength, has it even more than a lot of quarterbacks do. But the downside of that is that you can lean on that to the extent that sometimes you aren't as anticipatory as you should be. Will Greer has a very strong anticipatory game. And I think that when you look at his receivers that he's going to inherit in Carolina, DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel as two good examples, Ian Thomas, you know, these aren't guys who are known for winning the ball in the air. They're not fade route types. They're receivers who run good enough routes to break open, and they use their quickness to get open in that first available window. And if you can hit them at that first window or that second window, but they don't have to stop, letting them catch the ball heading downhill in stride makes them extremely dangerous. They're great open field players. In addition, because they're smaller receivers, they're not Steve Smith. They're not guys who go up and win the ball on fade routes and rip the ball away physically and post up on defenders in the vertical game. That's not the strength of their game. You know, you're not looking for them to do that in the way that you would with DK Metcalf. So that means you need to hit these guys in stride when they go deep. And Will Greer, he didn't have receivers who were rebounders either. David Sills, Gary Jennings Jr., he hit them in stride, and he did it so well at the college level. I think you're going to see him do the same at the NFL level. And so one of the things, though, is that people have fears about with Greer, and why he dropped a bit was the quarterback discussion. I'll say it's the former quarterback discussion that Will Greer has to put everything into his throws to get the ball deep. Well, there's kind of a let's talk about that for a minute, because I didn't see a ton of that. Mark Schofield didn't see a ton of that. I'm sure it exists on some opposite hash throws. Okay, but when you chart games and you realize the number of opposite hash throws that quarterbacks actually make, or number of throws where they make the, you know, they're trying to attempt a throw, you know, deep down the field, the number of attempts that are actually made, they're pretty small. And if you anticipate well, you don't oftentimes don't have to make those types of throws. Or if you do, you're throwing them in at a shorter range because you're anticipating well. And I'll just add this as a little bit of a criticism of some player analysts, okay? The flaw with some former player analysts is that they can get too focused on athletic skills and they do it to a fault, okay? Not always. I mean, they certainly, there's some fine guys out there and we all have our flaws with it. But I've noticed that when I watch, you know, the NFL top 100, that players over and over again, the biggest thing they talk about is athletic ability with other players. They're in awe of other players' athletic ability. And it's usually the big calling card that you see with these players and former players is that they tend to be very impressed with physical skill. The very best players tend to be more technique oriented and talking about technique. And I think that what ends up happening is that there's a very there's low hanging fruit to talk about just a small amount of technique that when and X's and O's when it comes to basically transferring from being an NFL player to an analyst. You can talk about basic things and it shows a great deal of knowledge for, you know, the fan base that listens in. But a flaw can be is that they don't talk about really the smallest details all the time in a way where they see how those can make a difference. Because that's not one of the things that they really focus on a great deal. You know, I would say they can get overly impressed with arm strength, overly impressed with speed, and they don't think about some of the compensating factors that can make a player really strong in very subtle detail. And sometimes it's because maybe they themselves didn't notice those things or weren't very good about those things at their game, at their level of play. It's not for every player analyst, but it's for some. So, you know, when we talk about quarterbacking, I find that a lot of times there's too much emphasis on arm strength. So I like Greer. I like his situation. Speaking of quarterbacks, the Ravens receivers, a lot of people are pretty much done with the Ravens that, you know, if you're a fantasy player, a lot of fantasy players are like, this is a bad situation. For the receivers to land at, you know, Boykin was a high prospect. Brown was even higher in many people's analysis. Now they're landing in a place where they run the ball a ton. And, you know, Jackson doesn't have a high completion percentage. And there's not enough promise there. He's not going to throw a ball enough. He's not going to be accurate enough. This is a bad spot. That's what a lot of people think. Couldn't be further from my analysis. If I were you, I would be trying to target Lamar Jackson as someone to get because, one, you're going to get him at a bargain because so many other people don't like him that he will be available late. And, two, I think that people have a bad conclusion about Lamar Jackson because he doesn't fit their notions of what to look for in a good football player. We can start with the Wunderlich and his intelligence. Let's talk about that. He had a low Wunderlich, which is a 13. Yes, the Wunderlich is meaningless to most of us who actually are football fans and analysts who understand that academics have questioned the and really just kind of pretty much criticized the Wunderlich for being a horrible test to try and match intelligence, especially intelligence for on-field play, for quarterbacking. Okay. Jim Kelly, Dan Marino, Terry Bradshaw all had scores within the same range as Lamar Jackson. Okay. So That's not really a great measure of intelligence. I'll tell you a great measure of intelligence. Lamar Jackson coming from a high school offense to Louisville, taking on Bobby Petrino's offense, using basically a virtual reality type of system to be able to learn the offense and become a Heisman Trophy quarterback using good checks and audibles and understanding coverages in the way that he demonstrated very well in a pro style offense and making that transition very well. So to me, the intelligence isn't a factor. Now, I think what happens also is that people look at the offense and say, well, look at the completion percentage. It was bad. First of all, when you start talking about the stats, there's not a huge enough sample size yet to really have anything that's going to be sticky. So, you know, people can say you're going to cherry pick plays and look at a few plays that were good and you're going to lean on that. I'm going to say, well, you're going to cherry pick some data that you're going to try and claim is sticky, but the sample size is too noisy. The context behind the data isn't really strong. And basically, you know, we're going to be kind of at a standoff with that. One thing that I'll say is this, is that we have to understand that the entire offense for the Ravens was changing from the beginning of the year. So there really wasn't a lot of continuity with it. Think about it. We went from Joe Flacco, a pocket passer, to Lamar Jackson, using him in the option game. Now, they ran the same run plays with Flacco and Jackson, and were getting ready for Jackson by using the types of run plays without option to make sure that the offensive line was ready to do this and that the skill players in terms of the running backs were ready to do this. But when you switch from a drop back quarterback to an option quarterback, your timing is going to change. Maybe not to a level where you could say, you know, academically or theoretically, you could say it's the same, you know, basically it's the same. The timing's going to be the same, or there's going to be an adjustment that everybody's supposed to be on the same page with. But those changes, are as small as they are going to matter. It's going to matter in terms of where the ball arrives and when in the route the ball may arrive, what to look for and what to read in terms of that receiver to quarterback interaction. And when you've spent, you know, more than half the season working with Joe Flacco, with the most reps during practice, preseason, during the season, practices during the season, you know, during the regular season, you're going to develop a certain level of timing. So if you're going to change not only the quarterback, but also change the way the timing's going to be with the routes to the pass because of the fact that you're going to be using more option looks, then there's a different rhythm to those plays. And so what I would contend, or what I do contend, is that we don't have enough information to really look at the data and say that Lamar Jackson was a bad passer. And, you know, certainly I understand that there are people who are like, well, just look at the film. I see that. And I understand that there's some people who feel that way. But I'll just say this immodestly. I study quarterbacks for a living. I study draft prospects for a living. And while I certainly make my share of mistakes in this space, it's not an easy thing to do. I feel pretty confident in my evaluation that Lamar Jackson has a lot of promise to be a good passer and that he didn't show anything last year that gives me cause for concern. If anything, I'm more enthused about what I saw with him because he looked as comfortable in the pocket in the pros as he did in the college game. And I think that once we see him have a full summer working with his starters, getting into a rhythm, you're going to see some improvement. He may not jump from a 58% passer to a 63% passer. Maybe only jumps a percentage point or two because, again, he's going to have new receivers now. So that's going to be part of it as well. But I think you're going to see some improvement that's going to be a positive. And I think that when you look at Boykin and Brown, you have to understand that Brown, one of the things I really liked about Marquise Brown's game was his ability to find open space in the middle of the field and either settle into the zone, catch the ball and avoid the first contact, or to be able to get low and avoid the hit. So there's some savvy there to be able to work the middle of the field. And I think that that's going to be really helpful, not only from the big play standpoint, but he'll also be able to make some of the smaller ones. I anticipate that as long as he can stay healthy or get healthy enough to actually be on the field this year with the Liz Frank injury that he had, if he's healthy enough to go and can stay that way, not have any type of compensatory injuries, which should be a concern for fantasy players. I would say this year, if you're going to be ultra cautious with Brown, I would just say, listen, he's probably going to have compensatory injuries. He's going to have some pulled hamstrings or a calf injury or some nature of like that. And it's not going to be a great year for him, but you're going to hear a lot about his promise when he is on the field in practice, or maybe a game or two where he plays really well or shows something that you're looking for, but then misses games during the stretch. So that's the worst case scenario. The best case is he's healthy and you're going to see him get a lot of touches. I think you're going to see him get a lot. If he stays healthy, you're going to see a lot of touches on option plays, screen passes, slants. You're going to see him work crossing routes, deep vertical routes, like corner routes and post routes and go routes and double moves. And you're also going to be able to see him work in the middle of the field on short routes where Lamar Jackson scrambles and he works back open and he's able to get yards after the catch. So Brown is very promising as long as he can stay healthy. Boykin, I haven't budged on what I think about Boykin either. This is a good route runner. Yeah, he can get better at it, but he's a good college route runner who shows the pro skills you're looking for to develop into a top route runner in the NFL. And I think he's going to do a good job of being able to get downfield and win targets. And Lamar Jackson was not afraid to target receivers downfield and throw it in the vertical game with the receivers back to the quarterback. And Boykin is excellent at tracking the football, but he's also a physical guy who can win on these slants and dig routes. And so you're getting a sure-handed receiver with physical ability to win tight coverage, to win the ball in the air, and to win timing routes. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Boykin has the better year this year, or if Boykin even has the better career, just from the standpoint if you play the odds of his size, his strength, and his durability versus what you might fear from an extremely short and small player, really an extremely small player, who's very light and already coming off of a Liz Frank injury. But I think that what they want to do schematically is really fun. And I think that you can see this offense improve even more because as John Harbaugh said, my favorite Harbaugh, John Harbaugh said, they're building this offense from the ground up and they started last year. So you're going to get the option elements. They're going to continue to do that. You're going to continue to see Lamar run the ball, but he doesn't take a lot of hits. He's smart about not taking a lot of hits. I think that he's the type of player that maybe he's not going to be a 1,300-yard rusher this year in the way that the stats project last year. I think you're going to see him throw it a lot more, but you're going to see him run it enough that you can see a 600 to 800-yard rushing season, maybe even 1,000-yard rushing season again, on that track for that again this year. But you're going to see him do what he did last year, run out of bounds, slide, be able to make sure that when he takes a hit, it's not a big one. He's been wise about how he does that, how he protects himself. I expect him to continue to do that. But you're also going to see a more familiarity with his offense and his receivers. And this is a guy that read the full field at Louisville. He was able to read it from sideline to sideline, high to low, low to high. He was someone that could come off reads, move with great control in the pocket, and find that next read, find the second window of a route, to be able to go across the field to a receiver and hit a very fine window between safety and trailing cornerback. He's a guy who can do that. I've seen him do it at Louisville. I've shown it on tape on YouTube repeatedly. Okay. So give him better receivers, give him a full season of continuity and now that he understands the offense and now it's just a matter of getting reps to work on it, I think he's going to be fine. And that's the thing with Lamar that I think a lot of people understand is, they look at that 13 Wunderlich score and say he's not intelligent. That's the score on the level of a janitor, as one article out of Louisville mentioned. But But here's the thing. Okay, first of all, book intelligence is different than on-field intelligence and recognizing information. And it's a culturally biased test that studies basically quick thinking using a base level of knowledge that you learn in school, not on a football field. You're not calculating math on a football field. You're not doing math on a football field. You're not looking at different types of, you're not using layers of information that you use in a classroom that you would use on a football field. Okay. And Lamar Jackson has shown plenty enough that he thinks fast on a football field. And so the only thing that I would say it applies to is maybe he didn't learn the playbook as fast as someone else might in terms of the verbiage of an offense. That might be the one thing I would speculate that it took him a while to do. And if it did that, if that happened, then it may, of course he might be a little slower in the pocket, a little bit slower in terms of what he's doing because he's trying to match up what he remembers of, with the call with what's going on with the play. Jared Goff had the same issue. Jared Goff's Wunderlich wasn't low, but he came from an offense that had a lot less verbiage to it, to an offense that had a high level of verbiage. And I think that probably Marty Morningwig's West Coast style of offense, even when they changed it, probably still had enough verbiage in it that maybe it tripped up Lamar a little bit. That's the only thing that I would say. But I think he's an unusual player where people make bad conclusions about him because they're not thinking about the context in the way of how that may apply to his game. So we're going to find out. He's going to be one of the more interesting players, obviously, over the next 2 to 3 seasons to see how this works out. Another player I like that a lot of people don't is A.J. Brown. I still like A.J. Brown too. I think that, you know, people are worried about Marcus Mariota and how he's performing and how Corey Davis didn't perform well. So if Corey Davis didn't perform well, then, you know, how can A.J. Brown perform well? Well, let me tell you, first of all, Corey Davis plays one position in the wide receiver core. A.J. Brown can play all three positions in the wide receiver core. Marcus Mariota, when he was playing in 2016, one of his best receivers was Rishard Matthews. Rishard Matthews had, I think, about 1,600 yards combined in 2 seasons as a big slot player. A.J. Brown's better than Rishard Matthews right now, if you ask me. A.J. Brown's big. He's fast enough to split the seam. He's good enough to play outside. He's physical enough to win routes. He's good. He's better than Matthews after the catch. Brown is going to get open. Marcus Mariota can find him in the middle of the field. And if Mariota gets hurt again, Ryan Tannehill has proven without a shadow of a doubt that he can support a high-volume slot receiver, if we remember Jarvis Landry. So I expect A.J. Brown to have a good bit of volume this year. I expect him to be switched in and out of the slot with Adam Humphries. I expect him to be probably the most productive fantasy receiver this year. I think he's going to be at least in the running and will surprise people who pretty much wrote him off this year as being productive because of the surrounding talent. And remember, Delanie Walker will be back. Now, if he can stay healthy, that's going to be the big thing. But he'll be back. Corey Davis will be in that lineup. There are going to be enough weapons around that teams just can't shut down one player like they were doing with Corey Davis when Delanie Walker got hurt in the early part of the year. Because let's face it, Taywan Taylor is fast and he's exciting to a degree, but he's not a complete receiver. Tajay Sharpe isn't a complete receiver. You know, those guys weren't mismatches for defenses on a regular basis. Jonnu Smith is still kind of learning the game at the pro level. So with a full complement of guys who can be mismatches in Walker, Davis, and Brown, they're going to work off each other, and that's going to be a good thing as long as they can stay healthy. Okay, so let's talk about some things that readers wanted to ask about. Foster Moreau, what's his upside? Can he be a top 5 receiver at the tight end position? And I think the answer is he can be, but I wouldn't put odds on that. I wouldn't count on that. But I would count on him being a capable top 12 to top 15 fantasy receiver. And the reason is in Oakland, if they're going to run the ball a good bit, they want to be able to have a quality tight end to work the play action game with. And Foster Moreau is very underrated as an athlete. We saw what he did at the combine, and that shows you that he can get up the seam. He showed in the Senior Bowl he could win against tight coverage and that he was willing to go up and win the ball, and he did it in a physical manner, and he is a physical player. Plays with an edge. He's a good blocker. He's going to develop into a complete tight end, if you ask me. And yes, that means he has some of that upside, maybe some of that Greg Olsen-like upside to his game. I think he could be maybe within that realm, and that means that the possibility is there. But I would be cautious enough with it because, one, you're looking at Oakland's offense, and you have to understand that John Gruden is probably going to be going through a couple of quarterbacks at this point. I think Derek Carr, you know, has proven what he can be, which is a competent NFL passer, but has some flaws that can probably eat away at the nerves of certain coaches. And I think John Gruden's going to be one of them because Carr against pressure can kind of, he can lose his bearings and make some impulsive decisions that can be game changing. So I think that they may end up going through another rookie quarterback experiment or a series of free agent quarterbacks. So Moreau may not get the chance to grow with one guy and really develop that great rapport. So his career may be a little more up and down, but I think he has starter talent, and I think he's going to start sooner than later, probably by the end of this year, if not earlier. And I would definitely bet on him as a guy to pick up and consider as a late round bargain if you can't get a hold of some of the early round guys that are really at the top of this class. Moreau's a good one to target. So Kagan Cantrell, you wanted me to talk about Dexter Williams in the outside zone and that the Packers are implementing that and how that could be really helpful for a guy like Williams. It certainly hurts Jamal Williams to an extent, because if they're going to run more outside zone with that, then, you know, certainly Williams' quickness and speed hasn't really been up to the level that I hoped. And Aaron Jones is a much better match for that. So if they run that, then you're looking at Dexter Williams, who also reminds me of Aaron Jones and is really strong vision, good cutback runner, someone who shows a great deal of footwork and skill with his footwork and patience. He's not a tackle breaker. I think Aaron Jones is actually a little bit better balanced than Williams, but Williams is a guy who really fits in with this team in terms of where they're heading. And I think that he can be an effective player in this Packers offense, and he's worth targeting for a team that, you know, if you have Aaron Jones, you probably want to get Dexter Williams. I think that he can be a guy that eventually down the line, you'll be glad you had him if Aaron Jones gets banged up, and especially in terms of fit with scheme. So I like the suggestion of bringing him up. I was just super impressed with his vision. I think that Notre Dame did some kind of unusual things with how they pulled different types of linemen and in the alignments that they were in, that sometimes it looked like a traffic jam for Williams to have to try and negotiate against certain teams. And I thought he did a fantastic job of being able to negotiate those tight spaces. Vision overall, he was one of the better backs, I thought, in terms of negotiating between the tackles and finding solutions that were difficult. So that aids him for the NFL game, even if I don't like the fact that he doesn't break as many tackles as I wanted to see from usually from a starter. But overall, yeah, good player. How about Josh Oliver's potential rookie impact? Can he make an impact right away? And I think the short answer is no. But I like his game. I like where he's heading because he's a very good receiver. And that's the reason why I think the question's asked and why people are picking him is you can see him adjust to the football, make advanced adjustments to it in the middle of the field, willing to take contact. You also can see some development as a blocker, especially as a lead blocker. But I think that the Jaguars are going to want to see him get bigger, get stronger, and show that he can hold up as a blocker and not just as a move tight end. So maybe he'll play as a second tight end or a situational tight end this year, but I don't think he's going to get enough volume for you to look at him and say he's a fantasy factor. Okay. So you're drafting him based on a patience play. And I think he's a good patience play, especially if this team can hold up along the offensive line and give Nick Foles the time to throw the ball. They do that, then, you know, certainly that will help this receiving game a lot. And it's going to help guys like, you know, Dede Westbrook, and maybe if DJ Chark can, you know, be a little less multidimensional as a receiver, that may help him. But you're going to see, you know, Marquise Lee, if he can stay healthy, and Dede Westbrook thrive from this in this passing game. And Jeff Swaim is basically a guy who's a placeholder here. He can block well enough. He's a decent enough short range receiver who will get some more intermediate looks. Maybe we'll even see James O'Shaughnessy get unlocked a little bit. He has good athletic ability that hasn't really been used a lot because of the quarterback he has had in Blake Bortles. So I would kind of look at this Jaguars offense as a whole as a reset for the passing offense, because you can say the team wants to run the ball, and it will. It's going to want to run. They're going to try and run. They're going to establish the run, try and throw the ball off of that. But you're going to have a more efficient quarterback who actually sees the field better than what you had in Blake Bortles, which means that different receivers are going to get some love in this class. I mean, in this depth chart. I anticipate that Dede Westbrook is going to make an impression because I just thought that he was one of the most impressive receivers on that team. And I wouldn't even be surprised if Keelan Cole makes a little bit of a comeback there. If he can hold on to the ball a bit, that might be interesting. But we'll see in camp. They may have faded him a bit just because they've already moved on with Chark, and they may be pushing Chark down the throat of this offensive scheme and the quarterback here. But we need to see Chark catch the ball a little bit better and run better routes before we get too excited about him. How about Travis Fulgham, Detroit's wide receiver? Fairly big, I think, like, what, 6'2", 217, somewhere in that range. He tracks the ball really well. I was really impressed with that. And I think that he's a guy who has sticky hands. He can catch it, win the ball in the air. He showed some enough burst to compete for playing time. And so if he can continue to show that burst and speed that you want from a receiver, then the hands are there. And he certainly can block. We like that about him. And, you know, you look at Marvin Jones and Kenny Galladay, they're entrenched there. But you can probably move Jones around to the slot if you need to. They like using Kenny Galladay in the big slot type of area of the field. So Fulgham could have a place as an outside guy. I don't think it's going to happen this year, but I do think that with a good camp, he could put himself in the position for some contributing time on the field this year, and then maybe a shot to start in a year or two, you know, as we see the contracts shake out with Galladay and or Marvin Jones. And speaking of players, you know, I think people have kind of talked about, you know, our man TJ Hockenson. I know that my buddy Bloom isn't so high on TJ Hockenson in Detroit, but I still remember Brandon Pettigrew getting drafted 20th overall when Matt Stafford was the first overall pick, and they worked together, and Pettigrew was a top 12 tight end for 2 years in the second and third year of Stafford's campaign. And Stafford in his third year had career totals of, I think, 5,038 passing yards and 41 touchdowns, career highs. So they want to get him a tight end. I'm sure Matt Stafford's wanted a tight end who could catch the ball. This is not just a running game destination. This is going to be, they're going to provide some balance here. And I think that you're going to see TJ Hockenson have a strong career and a strong start to his career in Detroit. It may not be 1,000 yards or 800, 900 yards this year, but I think you can expect 400 to 600 yards out of TJ Hockenson this year. And if it happens, you know, second half of the season, you might get, you know, first year, you know, tight end one kind of production out of him down the stretch. So I definitely keep an eye out for that. How about Paris Campbell? You know, asked about Paris Campbell. Can he fit in? Can he be a, you know, complete receiver? Is he going to be able to run better routes? you know, if you've gotten the RSP, then you know that I think he has the makings of being a good route runner and already shows that. But if you just are talking about the numbers without a context and you say, well, you only run certain number of routes and, you know, he was only targeted, you know, his average depth of target was really low. As I talked about on Adam Levitin's show, listen, you know, that A dot may be low, but if you look at the examples where he runs routes, his technique is actually very good. You know, when you can drop your weight and, you know, take that one single drive step, drop the weight and come back to the ball, you basically performed the process you need to run some of the more difficult routes in the route tree. You may have not done it a lot, but he did it enough and did it good enough in those isolated circumstances that it's going to be translatable. And I think you're going to see Campbell be kind of a split, kind of be a slot receiver and a flanker in this offense because of his skill after the catch. Those are the two areas where he's going to wind up. And what I'm most interested in with the Colts is how this plays out over the next couple of years, because Devin Funchess has a one-year deal. You have 2 years left for T.Y. Hilton, and he is getting a little bit on the older side. So they may want to continue to roll with him because of his great play inside and out and his rapport with Andrew Luck. I mean, I wouldn't want to discount that. You might want to see him retire with the Colts, or at least give him a couple more years and let him play until it looks like he's really diminished skill-wise, or he's about to. But if you part ways with Hilton, and if you part ways with Funchess, which I think they will, if Deion Kane can return to full health and play like he did this summer and build on that, I think he can. I think he can be a Davante Adams-like split end in this class or for this team. And if you get that, then you can put Deion Kane, who's a very good deep ball receiver, at split end. You can put Campbell at flanker. And you can really switch either of those guys in terms of what they do well. But you can put those two guys outside. And then you can put Penny Hart, if Penny Hart has a good showing, and I believe he will, Penny Hart in the slot. And occasionally, you can switch those guys because Penny Hart has flashes of a vertical game and flashes of being able to run some outside routes. And you can put him at flanker, and you can put Paris Campbell inside. So it gives you some flexibility. So I like Paris Campbell's landing spot. I think Paris Campbell can have an impact this year. I think they'll find situations to put him in because if you saw the way that the Colts were able to use three tight ends and do that effectively in the passing game, shows you that they were inventive, that they were finding ways to scheme to their personnel and to take advantage of that personnel that they had on the field. And that flexibility is going to speak well to what they will do for Campbell. So I'm not in the least bit worried about Campbell. I think he's going to develop. I think he's a smart player, catches the ball well, great after the catch. And yes, I think he has what it takes to be a good route runner and to develop along those lines quicker than most who may not have the experience of running as many routes. So, yeah, I like that. What about two of my favorite players in this draft class? Not necessarily the best players, but could turn out to be pretty darn good. Trevon Wesco of the Jets. I know that Chris Herndon had a good season last year. Some of that was by default because they were losing receivers left and right. And Herndon's a good straight line player in terms of speed, in terms of his physicality, former running back or H-back, I believe. And he can catch the ball for sure. But Wesco outclasses him completely as a blocker. And that's going to get him on the field. Okay, so everybody's going to think of him as a blocker first, and for good reason. I mean, this is a guy that Daniel Holgorsen said was, you know, part of his offensive line, and he can be an H-back and work across the field. He can be a lead blocker as a fullback for Le'Veon Bell, even though Le'Veon Bell likes to run a lot from single back sets. But he can do a lot of that and then work into the open field. And see, the thing about Wesco that's so impressive is how quick he is. He has a really sudden change of direction for his size at 270 pounds. And when you watch a guy run whip routes, as I've talked about with Akeem Butler, he did that at the Senior Bowl. And guys overran him. You know, he was sudden in those routes. He was flexible in how he could drop his weight. I mean, again, this guy used to be a quarterback. He must have been an athletic quarterback. because it shows up. And how he gained his weight and muscle, he didn't lose the flexibility of his body. He's still mobile and flexible, and it shows up in his route running very well. And when you can get that little bit of separation, and then you're a tackle breaker, or you're a guy that can be mobile enough to avoid low hits and diving shots, and then also shake off wraps and hits, you're a yards after the catch monster. And I believe that he's going to be that kind of guy that can give Sam Darnold a lot of production as a dump off receiver. And also a guy who I think is good enough to be able to stretch the seam here and there, especially off play action. And the benefit of it is that because he's known as a blocker and he's a good one, he will be in situations where linebackers are going to get baited into the run game. And he's going to go over the top behind them and leave them behind him, even though they'll catch up and they'll catch him, you know, and bring him down. He's going to get 15, 20 yard gains, you know, if he gets onto the field and becomes a consistent weapon. And I think he will. Then there's Darwin Thompson. You know, I got really excited about Darwin Thompson on Twitter when he landed with the Kansas City Chiefs. And part of it is because I don't think Mecole Hardman is going to completely replace Tyreek Hill if we are correct that Tyreek Hill will likely be gone from the Chiefs this year. And if that happens, then, you know, certainly Hardman is a good conceptual fit. And there's going to be a lot of things that he can do well, run in the open field, get open in the vertical game, win on some back shoulder routes in the timing game, as long as he doesn't have to be too physical doing it, yards after the catch. All of that's going to be there for Hardman. Return game. But Darwin Thompson, what I like about him is that he also can catch passes downfield. He's fast enough to be able to win matchups against linebackers and some safeties. So he's going to be able to do that. Patrick Mahomes likes targeting guys downfield, and the Chiefs like targeting their finding mismatches like that so that they can target running backs downfield in that fashion. And Darwin Thompson, I think, is every bit as fast as Kareem Hunt, and Kareem Hunt had some big plays in that regard. So I'm not really too worried about Darwin Hunt not being a game breaker in speed. He's fast enough. What I also like about Darwin Thompson is because even though he's short, he is strong. And because of that strength, you look at what he's going to be able to do in the screen game, also as a between the tackles runner and as an outside runner. He's going to break tackles and he's going to be able to get into the open field. And he may not win this job outright. I think that would be a surprise. But I think that he can develop into a player who eventually becomes the lead back. And he reminds me of Brian Westbrook. You know, I've talked about Duke Johnson. I've talked about maybe Deion Lewis with Thump. I've talked about, you know, a number of players that compare to him, Tariq Cohen at like. But really the player that he reminds me of a little bit is a stronger Brian Westbrook. And Andy Reid drafted Brian Westbrook, coached him in the Senior Bowl, wanted this guy from the get-go, seeing him at Villanova. And I think Andy Reid probably saw this Utah State guy and thought, he can be my Brian Westbrook in this offense where I have Donovan McNabb plus throwing him the ball. So I think Thompson is a smart play to deliver some of that Westbrook type of production. And if you recall, Brian Westbrook was, you know, a top five fantasy player for at least a couple of years and a Pro Bowl caliber player. And Thompson's a little more rugged. So I like what I see out of this. And I think that you can use Thompson split outside and have him run some outside runs, you know, from a receiver position. You can also use him in the backfield as a between the tackles guy in surprising ways. But he may start his career as more of a scat back, and that's fine. So those are guys that I found interesting here. Will Greer, the Ravens receivers for sure. You know, and how that also Lamar Jackson and kind of underscoring a lot of that, A.J. Brown, Foster Moreau, Dexter Williams, you know, Josh Oliver, Travis Fulgham, our man Paris Campbell, Trevon Wesco, and Darwin Thompson. Good players. It's going to be fun to see how they stack up.
So I want to thank everyone for listening tonight to this RSP cast. And more so, I want to thank everyone for their support of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. As I sit here this evening with the 2019 rookie draft season in the books, you know, I reflect a little bit about, you know, starting all of this and where it's led at this point. And I think, you know, one of the things that I always wanted to be able to do is to create something of value to people. And I really got a nice indication of where that is today, or really this week, when I tried to send out a gift email to my subscribers. It was just kind of a preliminary cheat sheet, an early one for those drafting, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday before I could get the RSP post-draft out. And I kind of messed that up. I messed it up because I was sending it to, through an email service that I use that is really just more for my sales database as opposed to what I use Constant Contact for my newsletter, and it works great. But the sale database isn't really great for that. And so I had a lot of bounces with that email and a lot of people who said they didn't get it or weren't able to get it correctly. And so I was sending out a lot of different emails on Tuesday, probably a few hundred, which is a small amount in the scheme of things, but still significant. And, you know, I mean, it was a gift that I was sending out, but at the same time, I used to work in places where you'd get customer feedback, and our job was to deal with customer feedback. And so I'm used to what types of things that customers can say and what they, how they feel, and them expressing the wide range of emotions that they have, and understandably so oftentimes. So it was interesting to me that all the responses that I got from people were just amazing. You know, just thankful for the publication, loving the work, wanting to pay me more money. I hear that a lot. even the very worst responses, and they weren't even bad. The worst responses I got were just a statement of fact. Saw your message on Twitter today about an email, and I was one of the ones that didn't get it. Thanks. That's it. When you get that kind of feedback, when you make a mistake, it gives you reason to be thankful about, you know, how things are going when it comes to your business. And the RSP is my business. And I'm really appreciative of the fact that, you know, that you guys are my readers and customers. So I just want to thank all of you for that very much, because, you know, when I first started doing this, I knew that I didn't really have, you know, a graphic design team behind me. I didn't have any kind of entrepreneurial seed money. This was just something that I thought, let me try and be as basic as possible in how it looks, something you could find in a file drawer, and maybe it'd be like buried treasure in a file drawer in the way that it looked. What I wanted it to be was no frills and completely about the content. And those that would recognize that would value it. That's what my hope was. And that's exactly what I've gotten. And so I want to thank all of you for your really enthusiastic support of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio over the years. I find it's fun to go. It was actually fun through this kind of period of trying to hurry to get everything done within the right amount of time for people to get this publication before a lot of their drafts. But it was still a lot of fun to look at my database and see that most of the people that I was emailing, they were multiple year subscribers, and I could track, like, basically when you get the RSP, you generally get it the next year and the next and the next and then the year after that, and you become a customer for life. And so I'm really appreciative of that. And a lot of the names I recognized as well from people from way back. And so while I may have just sent you kind of just a copy and paste email with the cheat sheet on it, I do want to thank all of you. You know, it means an awful lot to me, because this was something that I hoped would get to this point. And there were years that I wondered if it ever would. So, you know, the fact that I can do this job from home, the fact that I can do this and it's something I own and it's totally mine is a real blessing. So, thank all of you for that. And, for those of you who haven't gotten the RSP, hey, listen, you know, I appreciate you listening to this podcast and I appreciate any review or feedback that you can give. You can give it on iTunes if you want. If you don't, you want to give me more feedback, you can email me at mattwaldmanrsp@gmail.com. I hope all of you have an excellent weekend and good luck in your fantasy drafts as well.